I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George.
George.
My sobriety date is January 19th of 1994, by the grace of this program. Great sponsorship. Some work on my part. I still have my first spike chip. Does it mean that I won't be drunk tomorrow? May mean I may be drunk tonight. It's all depending on my spiritual well-being, and I don't think any step is tougher to deal with spiritual well-being than step 9. To get us up to speed to where we are, I walked in here, and I didn't believe my life was unmanageable. If you only behaved the way I wanted you, all would be well. And when I believed that way, when you changed, behaved exactly the way I wanted to you, I changed the rules again. I wanted you to behave a different way. And that was the unmanageability part. The powerless part is the way I grew up, the beatings, the abuse, all that stuff, and it wasn't for my family. The neighborhood, whatever that was, there was a lot of things I was powerless over, and alcohol intensified that feeling. So, you know, I couldn't drink safely. So that was my first step when I figured that one out. It took me a long time to wrap my head around that, because I was trying to think my way out of this. There was always, when it came to that second step, there was a lot of powers greater than me, the solution. When I got here, it was money, property, and prestige, the sixth tradition. Always diverted me from what I really should be doing. The bigger the car, the prettier the girl, the nicer the house, the nicer the job. That's what I pursued my whole life, and that's where I lived. And, you know, I got to a third step. You know, this is the way I looked at it, and I started to come in here, and my sponsor had me, and I love the second tradition because my second tradition led me to a second step. I came in here, I saw people that were genuinely happy, and I didn't know how to steal it, manipulate it from you, or buy it from you. So I had to come in here and trust in a process I didn't think was going to work for me. But I trusted the man that carried the message to me. We'll talk about that in a minute. So that second tradition actually led me to a second step. I got to that third step, and the decision was not to turn my will and life over to the care of God. When I was 7, I had a very traumatic, couple of traumatic experiences. One was the way my grandfather died. Another was what happened to me physically. I was abused by 2 men dressed as women, and it discolored my world. So there was no God in my life for a very long time, and I didn't want God in my life. So when I got to my third step, and I did my third step, was an event. I did it on the 4th of July of 1994 by a church after watching the fireworks at FAU. And my sponsor and I sat, and we got on our knees, and I wouldn't get on my knees before anyone. And here I did a prayer with somebody, and I didn't feel any relief, and I didn't feel God come into my life. And when I got up after saying the third step prayer, he said, "All right, are you willing to turn your will and life over to care of God?" And I said, "No." That's what I did. And he said, "Well, are you willing to turn it over to the care of the steps, as it says in the 12 of 12? And I said, "Yes." And I proceeded to get a pen and paper, which he gave me, and he said, "This is what I want you to do." And I walked around and went to every meeting there was in the world for step 4, because I didn't have a moral inventory when I got here. I lived on the streets of New York for a lot of years, so there was no morality. I mean, it's just the way it was. And, you know, I go to every AA meeting, raise my hand, and asked about the 4th step. I was told to write a life story. I was told not to write a life story. I was right to write the 10 worst things in my life. I was showed Hazelton guides, and I went through this when I went over the 4th step. I was showed all different kinds of ways of doing a 4-step. Used the 12 and 12, the 20-some-odd questions. And throughout that process, I was very confused. So my sponsor made it very simple. He said, "I want you to make a list of everybody that pissed you off in your whole life and why they pissed you off." And I just made a list of those people. And then we went to another step and another step. And eventually, I wrote what I called my immoral inventory. Today, I know how to take a moral inventory. And we kind of used the big book, and we kind of used the 12 and 12. So I had a lot of information on paper, like 28 pages of garbage, is the way I said it. But it wasn't garbage. It was really what I was feelings. And every time I said, "I feel this," my sponsor would say, "I don't care what you feel. I think this, I don't care what you think. I want this, I don't care what you want. Do the work and get the result." Well, I finished my 4th step, and I got to this 5th step, which says we admit it to God, to ourselves, and other human beings the exact nature of our wrongs. Well, I didn't think I had any wrongs. I thought everybody wronged me. I was still playing the victim. Victims don't recover, just so you hear that from me. They just don't. They'll stay drunk in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've watched that for a long time. They'll never get sober because they're playing the victim. And they told me I had to own up to my stuff. I didn't know I had stuff. I said, "Well, she has the car, she has the house, she has the kids, she has all the stuff." I said, but he said, "That's not what we're talking about. Inside, own up to your stuff." And I didn't know how to do that. So my sponsor was kind enough to make a list of all those things that he saw wrong with me. told me what they were. But that fifth step, I believe we do for three reasons. We go to God for forgiveness, and we talk about that eighth and ninth step about being forgiveness. But I believe forgiveness really starts long before that. We go to God for forgiveness. We go to ourselves for an understanding of what we've done. And then we go to another human being to practice that word, humility. And in step five, it's very clear what they say the word humility is. It's a clear recognition of who and what we were by sincere attempt to become what we could be. I knew what I was when I walked in here. The only, you know, I was trying to fool you. Everybody put my friends together. They all knew what I was. You put my family together. You got my story, you know. So I was not hiding from anybody. And I used to say, you know, people used to say when I came in here, they broke out in handcuffs. I used to have to be different because that's what we are. I used to say I broke out in spots, New York, California, Chicago, just the way I had to be different. And they told me my terminal uniqueness will kill me. So I got to that sixth step, and my sponsor and I made a list of those people and those things that I did that were defects in my character that I needed to address. Sixth step for me is stop doing what's wrong. You know, and the seventh step is start what's doing right. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. When we got to six and seven, I talked that a shortcoming and a defect of character. Dictionary definition is they're one and the same. I'm not going to argue with anybody here. It's not what I'm here for. This is my experience. So I don't get hung up on if it's a defect, if it's a thought, or if it's an act. It's what I got. If I got it and I spot it, what do I do with it now? So I got on my knees and I did my seven-step prayer. And what I learned when I got to step seven is that each step, and that's when I really woke up, I realized when I did my seventh step, I realized I had a fifth step in place. And then when I started looking back at my steps, when I did my fifth step, I realized I had a third step in place. And when I did my third step, I realized I had a first step in place. So I was doing work way ahead of where my head was. My body didn't catch up to me for a very long time. But what I did learn when I actually sat down with that A-step list. Now, and I want to talk about the inventories because we're in our second inventory step in step four. We do our first inventory, which is the inventory about us. Now in step eight, we're going to do the second inventory, which is about our fellow man, the people in our lives that we harm. And a harm is defined in the 12 and 12 is anything that causes emotional, spiritual, or mental conflict with another human being. So I had a lot of harms. Now I knew what a harm was. I thought a harm was waiting for you outside a bar and beating you with a bat. I mean, that's how I looked at things. I did not know that I caused emotional, spiritual, and mental damage to other people. I thought I was only hurting me. Little did I know at that point how real things were going to get. So I made my A-step list and we shared it. We're talking about the things that happened in step eight, and you know, and I have a bunch of lists. I have financial lists because of the monies, and I have family lists because of the damage. And I'm going to tell a lot of God stories tonight, more than most things. But I'm in my eighth step. I have this list. Now, what did I get? Last week I talked about the negative things that I walked into step eight with. And by doing the work that's laid out before my sponsor, that my sponsor laid out for me, I come out with the eighth step with some promises. There are promises in every step. We talk about the ninth step promises mostly. My favorite are 10-step promises, which we'll talk about next week. But the eighth step actually has promises. And one of the promises you get out of the state, get out of the eighth step, is that we get over drinking by doing our utmost to straighten out our past. You see, if I don't straighten out my past, I'm going to drink again. If I keep blaming my ex-wife for my problems, I'm going to drink again. If I keep using women the way I used women when I got here, I'm going to drink again. And to me, to drink is to die. It was really that simple. Either I was going to change or I was going to die. And that was my eighth step. I didn't get it in four, but I was getting it in eight. So that's the first thing. And then we're grateful for the results. I was not grateful. I couldn't blame my wife anymore. I still wanted to blame her. I sat in these rooms for years plotting how I can get even. And I'll tell a quick story that happened like a year ago. I get a phone call. We're on talking terms, somewhat talking terms. We'll talk about that in a minute. And I get a phone call from her last year, and we're talking about my kids, and there's that. And I'll talk a lot about my kids now in this step nine. And we're talking about my kids, and I say to her, she says to me, I need a vacation. I think I'm coming to Florida. And out of my mouth, not out of my words, but out of my mouth came these words. Well, if you need a place to stay, you can stay with me. Same woman that I was plotting to go back to New York, kill, sneak back so I can get my kids back in my life without anybody knowing. Where that came from is the grace of God. And today I can speak with her. I don't speak with her well and often, but we do speak. and that's conditional. Not because of my conditions, because of hers. She just doesn't answer the phone. That's the condition. When something's wrong with one of my kids, she'll answer the phone and we'll talk. Or if she needs something, she'll call me and ask for it. Otherwise, there's been no communication for many, many years. One of the other things, and I'm grateful for the results of that, and I'll tell you how those results came in 9. One of the other things I got, the feuds over years with people that I disliked or had problems with started to ease. They started melting away, is the way it talks about. And a lot of those feuds that I had with my sister and with my father and with my mom, they started going away. And I had nothing to do with them other than the work that my sponsor laid out for me. It's the beginning and of isolation from my fellows in God. The eighth step brought me closer to God. That inventory was bringing me closer to God. And I'll talk about the 10th step inventory for a minute, because that is all about my relationship with God today. That's where my 10th step comes in. So I have 3 inventories. My 4th step inventory is about me. My 8th step inventory is about you. And my 10th step inventory is all about God. And that's, for me, that's my opinion. It's not in our literature. So don't go tell somebody said, and I believe it. That's just my experience on that. It tells us we begin to identify the basic flaws and responsibilities for our whole pattern of life. On page 80 into 12 and 12, it says that since defective relationships with other human beings have nearly been the immediate cause of all our problems, including our alcoholism, no field investigation proved more rewarding than this one. Calm, thoughtful reflection on past relationships will pay, and pay handsomely. We'll go far beyond those things that were superficially wrong with us, to go see those flaws that were basic for the whole pattern of our lives. And that is my 8th step, the whole pattern of my life. So now I'm coming out of that, and I'm walking into step 9. I have all these wonderful promises I've been given. I'm feeling better about myself, and now I'm walking into this 9th step. Now, you can't fool me, because up there I know I'm making face-to-face contact with people. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to see. I don't want to know about it. Last week I talked about the different types of lists. The list that I have for those I'm willing to do right now, because those were the least offensive, and then the ones I might do, the ones I'll never do, my family and deceased. I had 5 lists. I didn't know where to go. Then I had the financial list. I had more lists, and I brought a couple of them, so, because I save all my old stuff. That was my originals. So those were my 5 lists, and, and some of the financial stuff was, I just told some stories last week of some things that were removed. So now I'm walking into step 9. What do I have when I walk into step 9? I walk into step 9 with a lot of harms that I've done to others and myself. I'm not going to get into a dispute about this either with anybody. After the meeting, I hear people say, put yourself on your 9th step list. My sponsor says the only amends you can make to yourself is you don't pick up a drink. Period. Your name doesn't go on that list. Some people tell you it does. Do what your sponsor says. That's all. I don't have my name on my 9th step list. My 9th step list has to do with forgiveness. And the only way I forgive myself is not harm another person again. And I still harm people, so I have a problem with that even today, years later. So I'm walking in there with harms and the damage to my children, to my ex-wife, because she's not the one who created the damage. I did, because I'm the defect in all my relationships. I know that today. And nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with me. So how do I get past that? I got these defects. I'm blaming. I keep secrets. I'm skeptical. I don't think it's going to... I'm argumentative. You tell me one thing, I want to fight with you all the way because I want to be right. I don't want to be happy yet. I'm justifying. I'm discontent. I'm still permissive in a lot of areas. I have temptations. I'm still humiliated. I still procrastinate. I still dodge. I still make excuses. I'm still full of evasion. I love wallowing. It's a nice way of saying I have self-pity. And I had a lot of that when I got to this step. I was reckless. I was a burden. I was indifferent to a lot of things. I was running around with a lot of dilemmas in my head. I was full of fear. I thought that was gone. They told me it was going to fall from me in another step, and here it was. More fear than I had when I did my 4th step. More fear than I had when I had my 5th step, because now I knew I was going to face those people. I screwed over. My sponsor used to say, you spot it, you got it. And if you got it, you need to clean it up. So here I am now in the... I'm delaying. I'm doing everything I can not to make these amends. I don't know about you. I don't want to make these amends. So I needed to know what an amend was. I hear a lot of different things. I use the dictionary. I like dictionaries because I have a definition of an amend is to put right, to make, to change or modify for the better. Alter, it's to alter formally by modification, deletion, or addition. You know, when I wanted to make an amends, somebody told me it's to make a bad relationship whole. My favorite thing in the big book, and we're going to talk about step 9, because we're going to talk about the kinds of amends. You know, the A step is only 2 lines in the big book and about 8 pages. The 9 step's about 7 pages, and in those 7 pages it talks about different types of amends. Direct amend, indirect amend, financial restitution. I think I wrote a bunch of them down. A living amend. Amends for people who are no longer with us, people that are deceased. So we make amends in many different ways. And I don't know how to make an amend because I never try to straighten any relationship out. I split, man. And, you know, when it calmed down, I came back. So I didn't know how to make whole anything. I was so lost when it came to this step. Sponsorship is key. I'll say that again. My sponsor sat down with me and said, what are you going to tell your mom? Which was the easiest because the big book says when we're confident in our recovery, we make those amends first, and it's usually with the family, which we did the most damaging. So I said, I'm going to tell her I'm sorry. He says, no, you're wrong. You're not sorry anymore, because every time you say you're sorry, you are. That's not making a relationship whole. So we role-played, and he gave me different things to say to different people. I wrote out what I thought and how it would go. And now I'm talking, I'm 9 months sober. I don't know which direction I'm going to take. I don't know how I'm going to make these amends. What amend I'm going to make to who. I don't know how God's involved in this. I'm doing everything I'm told to do, and I'm really in a lot of pain. They say the 6th step separates the men from the boys or the girls from the women. The 9th step really puts the rubber to the road because I know I need to sit down with people and tell them the truth about me. It doesn't matter what they did anymore. It matters what I did. It matters how I did it and what I do about it today. So the direct amend, it tells us, and the 12 and 12, really, I like what it says. Good judgment, a careful sense of timing, and courage, and prudence, these are the qualities we're going to need. I never had good judgment because when I came in here, my 1st step says I have faulty judgment, lack of awareness, and a warped perception. So my judgment stinks. So I need the judgment of someone else. So this is where my sponsor came in. So a direct amends, he told me to do certain things. When I was in my 3rd step, I was 6 months sober, and I was given a piece of a paper from the state of New York to give my children up, and I didn't know how I was going to deal with that. And I argued with it, and a couple of the women in this program sat down with me, and we went to the beach one day, and we turned around and took 2 pillows and blankets and wrapped up 2 and gave my kids to God, my 3rd step kind of thing. And I really struggled with that because I'm fighting on my head that I'm not giving my kids up. They're my kids. My kids come down to Florida to visit my mom. I'm not allowed to see them. And I say to my sponsor, they're 5 minutes away. I want to go see my kids. He said, you should leave them alone. I said, why should I leave them alone? He said, well, I want to see my kids. They're my kids. He says, well, you're a lousy custodian to them, so why do you want to go see your kids? I said, they're my kids. I want to see them. My ex-wife won't let me see them. They're at my mother's house. I'm going over there. There's 5 minutes. He said, well, why would you want to break up your relationship with your mother and your kids? Why would you want to ruin the relationship your sister has with your children? Why are you going to be that selfish and self-centered? So I didn't go over, and I didn't see my kids. And somehow that process of healing started, that forgiveness really started for myself because I knew I didn't belong there. So I wrote letters from 1994 for the next 14 years to my children and sent them to myself because that's what my sponsor told me to do. Never knew they were going to come into my life, never expected them to come into my life. Along that road, women would come into the rooms with a baby. My sponsor would say, go babysit. Go babysit. You can make another meeting. It's the only one she can make. Babysit for an hour. Go play with the kids in another room. Stay in the room. Color play. It was fine. After a while, I got tired of that. So I said to my sponsor, I'm getting tired of this. He says, well, you're doing it for 2 reasons. I said, no, you told me that's the only meeting she can make. What do you mean 2 reasons? He says, yeah, there's another reason. I said, what's that? He says, you can practice being the father you are to your own kids. It still hurts when I say that, but it's a truth that I needed to hear. sponsors have 2x4s and they hit them at you at the right time with them. And that 2x4 hurt. So I kept doing it. And today I'm here almost 19 years later. And if a woman comes in the room, I'll go over and ask if I can babysit for the hour. If it's the only meeting I can make. Most of them think I flip, but I'm afraid my sponsor's going to come down from where he is and beat me if I don't. You know, it's just the way I think. I know he's at another AA meeting in, somewhere else. And I was 9 months sober. And this is the letter I wrote the day that I had to sign my children over legally. And that was in 1995. And then in 1994, I wrote a letter when I wrote my 9-step to my children, which my children have. I read it on occasion. I'm not reading it tonight. It's just not there. It's very emotional. I talk about my daughter running in the street. I talk about me hitting her. And then at that moment, I made a decision. And my decision was not to see my kids, because the pain that I was carrying for my ex-wife, I was hitting my children instead of my ex-wife. And I was hitting that 2-year-old little girl like she was a full-grown adult. And that's not how I behaved. It's not how I was taught. And even in my addiction, I knew that was wrong. So I am accountable and I am responsible, whether I'm drinking or not. This thing that is, I blame it on my disease, that's horseshit. Pardon my English. But that's horseshit. I'm responsible for all my behaviors, while drinking and with not. And my 9-step is where I own up. And that's where I stop blaming others. And I stand up for the shit that I did. And I did a lot of shit. I hurt a lot of people along the way. I will tell you that this is a letter from 2008, 2 days after my daughter left, after she came to find me. She showed up in my life on January 2008, the 19th, my anniversary date. It was 14 years since I had any contact of any kind. 17 years, actually. It was 14 years since I was sober, and she showed up. She wanted to know who her father was. She came down here, and I got the pleasure of spending time with her, tried to make the amends to my son, and those letters that I talked about, this box of letters that showed up out of nowhere, I gave to her to bring home. And through that letters, she gave, and I had a medallion for every year for her and for my son. And I also had letters, cards, money in some of them. I don't even know what was in most of them. They were so old. And they were all addressed to me. And every address I lived from 1994 and when I got to Florida until 2008. And that box went home with her. And a couple of days later, I got a call from my ex-wife, that woman that I wanted to kill. And she said, I didn't know you felt that way. Whether I believe that or not really doesn't matter. But the forgiveness in my heart said I had to. And that ain't me. That's God. That's the grace of God. The grace of God, I believe, is even on all of us, especially in the 9-step. I'd like to say that we're great friends and we talk every day. We don't. And, you know, my prayer used to be, may God bless her and keep her far away from me. Today, I have no problem having a direct communication. I can talk to her. That's one of those great amends. My son, on the other hand, he had some trouble a couple of years ago. He's been trying to get this program since he's 16 years old. I don't even know if he's sober today. I really don't. I know that when he had a trouble, my ex-wife called me. I did everything I could. I made the contacts I could in New York and did everything I could to help him. He wants no contact with me. That's a direct result of my act of alcoholism. It has nothing to do with whether I'm a good guy now, because he doesn't know that, and he doesn't care to know that. That became God's business. That's those two children I gave up in that pillow back in 1994. Very hard thing, you know, and I know many women lose children in this program. I see lots of restitution. My first 14 years of recovery, when they used to read the 9-step promises and they say, are these extravagant promises? I said, absolutely. I never thought it would happen to me. So I got 1 out of 2 back because God saw fit. The emotions always come. I can't help it on night. Damn. I had a sponsor. Talk about my sponsor a little bit. I'm really not following my script at all. I never do on night. Those were direct, indirect, equal restitution. There were all the different kinds of amends you can make it all at once. The financial ones, some were forgiven, some weren't. I'll tell stories because I like God and all this. And I want to talk about a process. Because the first process I had to do is I had to surrender to my sponsor. And my way of thinking to my sponsor, because my thoughts and my actions still stunk, my third step. So I surrendered to my sponsor. And from that, when I surrendered my thinking to my sponsor, then my sponsor asked me to surrender the rest of it to the steps. And as I surrendered to the steps, I started surrendering to the fellowship. There were women in these rooms, and it's a fellowship of men and women. Not going to have that debate either. Because I've been doing a lot of things that they tell me I'm not supposed to be doing for a lot of years, and it works just fine because it's in the book. I don't listen to opinions, because opinions in Alcoholics Anonymous kill people. I'm very grateful to the people in these rooms that sat with me, the women that taught me to cry, that let me feel my feelings, even though they told me it wasn't about my feelings, that showed me how to be a father, that showed me how to be a parent. I didn't know how to do any of that. I didn't come with that book of instructions when I got here. That was given me by the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And because I surrendered to the fellowship, I started getting a relationship with God. And that's my ninth step, my relationship with God. So this process of my children and my sponsor, and I talk about my sponsor, Bob, the man who carried a message to me. He was born in November, I've got his card in front of me, of 1935. That was my first, the man who carried the message to me. And he died in 1996. I came in 94. I was with, I was his pet project. We always joke about that, the old times that know me. And the year before he died, I always tell, I love bad stories. The year before he died, actually not the year before, the year he died, that November, I went over to his house with a sponsee at the time. And we're over at his house for Thanksgiving, and he was real angry. Bob does not, he had me practice not cursing in the rooms because of my language, but he would do as I say, not as I do kind of thing, just like my father. and he cursed like a sailor. And we're in the house, and he's yelling about this guy, Archie. And this, I don't know if there's anybody around here that's been around long enough that remembers Black Archie, who was in a wheelchair from Old Central House. I know there's some people that know Helen Hart's name. But Helen Hart, Archie, that was his group. There's a whole bunch of guys, Dave DiOrio, Dr. Jerry. There's a whole bunch of guys that he was very close to. And I was lucky enough to be close to him. And he got sick. He had emphysema. And he was really mad. And he was cursing. And I said, you know, Bob, my sponsor said. So what did your sponsor say? I said, well, when you got a problem with somebody, pick up the phone and call them. Well, he started yelling at me, threw me out of his house, and then called me back in. And then when I came back in the next week, I went to a Thursday night, because we always had pizza on Thursday night. That was our deal. And at that pizza was Helen Hart, Jerry Henderson. There's a whole bunch of people. There was 160 years of sobriety, and I had like three. And it was a wonderful experience. I still carry that experience. A week later, Bob went to go see his children and never came back. He died. That was in December. That Thursday night, I was doing a big book study with a woman by the name of Linda Rye. And it was Wednesday that he died, and Linda and I on the phone. I said, I'm not doing the meeting tomorrow night. Why aren't you doing the meeting? Well, Bob just died. I don't want to do the meeting. Good friends, good support group said, well, Bob won. Who want me to do the meeting? Yeah. Well, why don't we meet for dinner and make a decision? We met for dinner. It's one of these God stories. We meet for dinner, and I sit down with Bob, and I sit down with Linda, and we have dinner. And I said, before we do make a decision, I want to go to St. Ambrose. It's a church down on Federal Highway. And Bob and I used to go to a Monday meeting there, and there's a little outside cove where I sat, and I said a prayer. And I got up, and I was smiling. I was just at peace. And in that peace that I had, I turned around, and I said, Bob's okay. She said, what do you mean? I said, Bob has met my mom. And he's home and he's okay. I said, let's go do the meeting. I go to the bottom line, I didn't mention the name of the group, which I usually don't do. And we're sitting in the meeting, and in those days I had a big glass and you couldn't see somebody walking in. The door opens, the room gets cold, the door shuts, and nobody walks in. The presence was there. It's the only one that I'd say. For those people who have had a spiritual experience, I don't have to explain this to them. To those that don't, wait, it's coming. I promise you it's coming. And Bob was in the room. And I knew I was okay. And I knew I was okay. That's another one of those experiences. And I knew Bob was okay. I talk about my mom a lot. And I'm talking about amends because not all my, most of my amends are living amends. My children, some yes, some no. My financial restitutions, I made the best I could. My mom was a pretty sick lady for 5 years. I used to go in the rooms, and if anybody tells you when you're feeling something or thinking something that you shouldn't share it in the room, you keep talking about it until it goes away. I don't care what anybody says. Because if you feel it and think it and don't bring it out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's going to take you out. So I would share about my mom being sick and being in the hospital, going in, going out of the hospital. And what ended up happening was at the very end, my mother was in hospice. And she wouldn't take the medication from the hospice nurses. I used to have to drive on my little 49cc scooter all the way to my mom's house and give her medicine. Now, if you know me, and those people who knew me before I got here, I don't do good with methadone or morphine or drugs like that, because one of the amends I had to make was to my father and my sister. My sister died while I was active. I wasn't present. I wasn't available. And my father died. That other list that I have of amends, people that died that I wasn't present for. And I was told on a Saturday, well, let me finish with my mom. And I turned around, and I was able to do that. And I didn't drink over it, nor did I want to. And I was able to be there for my mom. I had another situation with my dad and my sister, who were already deceased. And I used to steal my dad's morphine. Same thing I was giving my mom. I used to steal from him, and I used to take it. And that's what I did. And it took a long time for me to make right with it. And my sponsor says on one Saturday, I want you to please go to the cemetery on this day, and I need you to take, it was 9 months sober, I want you to take your 9 month medallion, put one by your sister, and put one by your father. I want you to write a letter, tell me what to do. And I was living in a fractional house, and I asked one of the guys to drive me, and it was pouring. It was a Saturday morning pouring. And I asked this guy to drive me. We get down to Davie, Florida. We pull into the cemetery. It's raining. It's black. It's dark. It's ugly. As we turn into the cemetery, the clouds part. It stops raining. The sun comes out. I sit down. I go out. I have balloons because my sponsors like to do things that way. Letters. And I sit down. I figure I'm going to be soaking wet. The ground is dry. I sit there for an hour. I write the letter. I send up the balloons. I take my 2 9-month medallions. I stick them in the ground in the cemetery. I get up and get back in the car, and I feel pretty good about myself. As we're pulling out of the cemetery, the sun goes in, the clouds come down, and it starts raining. Now, those are God experiences. That's the only way I know how to say them. I'm not the only one who has them. I always talk about them in the ninth step because they're real. Now, the book says fancy the real. Trust me, they're real, because I have somebody that was in the car that went through this with me. So I know it's not my insane thinking in this case. So that was some of the gifts that I got from doing a nine step. Now, those are good gifts. Now I can tell you the other ones. I picked up the phone and called the guy that I owed $10 to, or $30 for stealing his camera back when, and he doesn't talk to me. I told that story last week. There was a guy that was on my list that I swore I'd never make an amend to, and through circumstances, he showed up in my life, and I just said a quick prayer. It's in a big book, that I be given the direction and strength to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. I say it a little different. Just give me the strength and courage to do the right thing. It's up to you, buddy. You know, because I know if I'm going to screw this up. And I talked about stealing a Blaupunk radio from him out of his car, and he knew it. Everybody knew what I did. The only one who didn't know what I did was me, because I believed my lies for so long that they became my truth. And it was the sponsor that sat with me in the ninth step as I went over these lists to show me these flaws in my character that were keeping me from the sunlight of the Spirit, or as I like to say it, from God. You know, there's domestic amends. The book tells us we ask God to help when a drastic step is indicated. We must not shrink. We saw that we had to place the outcome in God's hands, or we would soon start drinking again, and all would be lost anyhow. The design for living is not a one-way street. I have a sister that I love to death. When I had my first 2 years of sobriety, I would take her at 5-minute intervals with somebody in the program and leave. For 3 years when my mom was dying, I had the pleasure of living with her, believe it or not, and being part of that family. I'm still part of a family. And then I moved out on my own. I got into a relationship. My relationship fell apart. I cut my hand. I got sick. I needed help. I had to ask her if I could move back in. Now, if you know how we were when I first got sober, that was never going to happen. And then I moved back in with my sister, and I became of service to my sister. Today, I have a wonderful relationship with her, the same girl that I didn't want in my life, the same one that didn't talk to me for my 2 years of recovery when I first got here for the damage that I did to the family. See, God is very forgiving, but I'm not, because I'm human. So I had to learn that if God forgave, why shouldn't I? So I have to forgive them one and all, as our literature says. It says, we keep always in sight that we're dealing with one of the most horrible human emotions when it comes to the domestic thing. It says, perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness demanded. No outsider can praise such an intimate situation. My ex-wife and I says, did you ever tell the kids why we really got divorced? I said, no, none of their business. It's between us. And it stays between us. Jealousy, one of the most horrible of human emotions. Big Book talks about it. It's the one that keeps me blocked from everybody else. And it says, the generalship may decide that the problem be attacked from the flank rather than face-to-face combat. There's no complication. There's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic saying the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But it's yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated, passing all the understanding of the patience of mothers and wives who had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, or perhaps would be dead. It wasn't for the people that loved us enough, in spite of all we did. There's two parts in the Big Book that I really like. The first one is on page 18, when it says an illness, and we've come to believe in an illness, affects those about us the way no other human sickness can. If someone has cancer, we're all sorry for them, but not so with the alcoholic illness, for with it goes the annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, warp lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone could increase on the list. And then Bill, because he's so smart, waits another 70 pages to catch us in page 82, where he talks about the alcoholic being the tornado running through the lives of others. Sweet relationships are dead. Hearts are broken. Affection have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits. There I am. Selfish and inconsiderate. Have kept the home in turmoil. We feel that a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. Yes, there's a long period of construction ahead, and we must take the leap. A remorseful numbing that we're sorry won't fit the bill. That's what my sponsor used to beat in my head. I had to say I was wrong, and what can I do to make this right? How do I make this relationship whole, if I can? There are some people that ask me to please step out of their lives, and some people have forgiven me, and some people I haven't got to see yet, because God hasn't put them in my life. But I'm willing to make them. At the beginning, I was willing to make amends for my children immediately. But that didn't happen for many years. And in one case, in the other case, it still hasn't happened. But a drink is not going to make that better. Running away and stuffing my feelings and filling it with something else is not going to make it feel. The feel good don't feel good. It's nothing but pain. So how do I do this? I have to walk a spiritual life that I didn't want when I got here. It says in the ninth step, and we're not on step 11, but this is the third or fourth time we're talking about meditation again. It says we ask each morning in meditation. So I'm already supposed to be meditating by step 9. To me, meditation was real simple. I used to sit at a Sunday morning meeting that went on at 10 o'clock and watch everybody with their being very peaceful and try to figure out where they were and how they got there. Could not pay attention to it. Took me a long time. And then somebody suggested that I be still for 5 seconds. And that 5 seconds became 10 seconds. And that 10 seconds became 20 seconds. And finally worked up to a minute. And then 5 minutes. And I have a meditation tape that I give to a disc that I use and that keeps you for a half hour. It took me a year before I didn't fall asleep listening to it. So, you know, we each get there in our own path, but I learned to sit outside in one of the halfway houses, or one of the sober houses I lived, I should say. There was a pond, and there was a cardinal that flew down every day. And I watched that cardinal. I'm very partial to cardinals. And if you go to my front yard, the whole place is full of cardinals because all of a sudden it just makes me at peace. So I just look for cardinals. That's just me. Butterflies, waterfalls. You know, different things attract me in ways that, you know, I went on a spiritual journey. I did some stuff with the American Indian and stuff like that because those things are all important to me. It says we look to see where religious people are right. It says this is a spiritual kindergarten. So part of my 9-step is to grow spiritually. It says asking each morning of our Creator to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. My favorite word in all my recovery is called consideration. See, when I'm considerate of you, I can't be the low life that I was when I walked in here because I have your utmost good first, not mine. Page 20 says our lives as ex-problem drinkers depend on our constant thought of us and how we can meet their needs. Not mine anymore. It's not about me anymore. It's about us. That was a tough one. There may be some wrongs we'll never right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves, we would write them if we could. That's my son. I can't write it. I'd like to. I'd like to give him the love that I have for him. It's never gone away, but he's not ready to receive it. And even though I'm ready, God doesn't have him ready. I have to let God get him there. It took a long time for my daughter to get there. It took a long time for other people in my life to get there. Some did, some didn't. I'm going to tell the hula story in a minute. It says we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. And one of the things that is really important, I want to try and pull that wording up exactly. We cannot be hard on other people. We have to take the lead in a lot of ways. And I'm going to exact wording. I hate when I do it. We should be absolutely sure that we're not delaying when we want to make an amends because we're afraid. There's that fear. God has not put everybody in my life. My 9-step list is the same one I had in 1994. I have added to it, leave room on the bottom because you're going to offend people in AA and in life. Because just because you're sober doesn't mean you're not human. So I left room on it, and most of them are gone. Some of them are not. Some people I'll never see again. I've made some indirect amends. One of them my sponsor had me making was going and feeding the homeless down on Broward Boulevard. Every year I used to go down with jelly sandwiches and a dollar bill because I used to steal food or manipulate food in the shelters in New York while I had money in my pocket, so that's one way of making an indirect amend. I got here, I was about a week sober, and Bob said to me, everybody had big books, I wanted a big book. I said, Bob, I want a big book. Everybody got a big book. He says, you see it on the shelf, take it. You forgot how to steal, you're here 3 days. So I took it, and I was so proud of my big book under my arm, and I opened it up, and I give it to him, and everything after Dr. Bob's nightmare he ripped out, he says, you don't need that, you go to speaker meetings, you want that, there's your recovery. That was my first big book. And then I was sober for about 6 months. He said, you got a job now? Remember that big book you stole? Anytime you see a newcomer that needs one, buy him one. That'll make up for all the guys you stole from when you're on the street. Little things like that, I still do. So we always lay the matter before our sponsor a spiritual vibe. Always asking God help and guidance. Meanwhile, resolving to do the right thing when it becomes clear, no matter what the cost may be. And that's directly out of the big book. I had a lot of problems with that because people showed up in my life that I didn't even remember. They weren't on my A-step list, but I did do things to them. And when they showed up, I just said the simple prayer and went forward. The 9-step was really tough for me because I had a lot of things that were really, really tough. And it says, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. See, I like to argue. I like to have scrapes. I like to be right. And this is a step where my sponsor said to me, George, you want to be right or you want to be happy? I said, I want to be right. He said, good, stay miserable, and walked away from me. I said, why did you do that? He says, because this ain't about right and wrong anymore. This is about appropriate and inappropriate. And you've been inappropriate for a long time. It's time you got right with God, not with me. I could care less how you behave. I don't care how anybody behaves in this room. I do care how I behave in this room. And that was real hard for me to get a grip around when I was new. So doing all this stuff, what positive stuff did I come out of with it? I did these amends. I spoke about my mom. I spoke about Bob. I'll tell you a gift that I was given. There's a young lady, Kelly. Hello, Kelly. There's a young lady named Kelly Peck. She's no longer with us. She was 39 years old. She had 13 years of recovery. I had three. Monday to Saturday, one of the women would take care of her. They were all married, and a woman by the name of Marion Shea, who's got about 45 years now, asked me if I would be the guy who go, yeah, my mama, asked me if I would be the guy who would be kind enough to go and do Sundays, because Kelly was a friend, and every Sunday for the last 6 months of her life, I got to pray with her, read literature with her, eat with her, take care of her 13-year-old son. Here I am being the father I wasn't. And was able to be there when she went home. So those are the gifts of doing a ninth step, indirect amends. People who show me how to live. My next wife, that I don't know what'll ever happen between us, but I know I'm willing to speak to her anytime she wants. What are the gifts that I got from doing all this work? Well, I was at peace with God. I was finally at peace with myself. I finally knew I wasn't going to damage you anymore. I stopped being a victim. Started standing up for my part in things. Stopped trying to minimize the truth, tell the truth as I saw it. And what I got out of that was good judgment. I knew what an amend was. I made relationships right. I practiced prudence. I knew about timing now, because my timing always sucked. I had courage. I knew how to reflect. I knew how to maintain. I had confidence. I had sobriety. I was actually sober. I was no more about physical sobriety. It was now about emotional sobriety. That was where the change started. I was not afraid to disclose my actions. I was not afraid to process. I wasn't as defiant as I was. I showed caution. I actually cared about how other people felt. I was not afraid to admit my wrongs when I had them immediately. I had peace of mind. I had patience. I was willing. I had discretion. I became responsible. I got freedom. 9 steps about freedom. And I'm going to say something about that when I close. I got responsibility and accountability. I got sincerity. I learned about being financially responsible. I was given an assignment to be financially responsible in my 9th step. There's a book called, it's not AA, but it's called The Richest Man in Babylon. It talks about, just like we have spiritual principles to live by, there's financial principles to live by. And my sponsor had me starting to do that. I learned about quiet and balance and well-being and honesty and tact and forgiveness, humility and helpfulness, common sense, kindness. What a great word that is. I was even keeled. I was steady. I was purposeful. I had relief. First time in my life, I had true relief and freedom. I had rest and prudence, and I was frank. I was aware. I became generous. I lived by principles now. I was not afraid to consult with others. I had meditation, and I was guidance. I learned a lot about prayer and of conscious contact with God. My favorite statement about the 9th step is real simple. I was a prisoner for a very long time, and I was a prisoner of my own making. Book talks about it. And I believe the 9th step sets the prisoner free, and the prisoner was always me. So if I practice forgiveness, I am no longer a prisoner. Thanks for letting me share a 9. We'll talk about 10 minutes.